Everyone, we'll, if you want to grab a seat, we'll get ourselves underway in a minute. So, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Hope you had a good tech ed so far. It's been a good, busy week. My name is Jaron Burbage. I'm the data center specialist for Microsoft in New Zealand. I look after all things data center, so private cloud, things around Windows Server, Hyper-V, System Center, and then on the public cloud side of stuff with Windows Azure. I'm joined here by my good friend Ben, over from Australia. I'll let you introduce yourself, mate.
Yes, I cover StoreCentral for Australia and New Zealand from a technical perspective. A little bit of microphone feedback. So I cover StoreCentral for Australia and New Zealand, and that is our cloud integrated solution. So we actually can do storage both on-premise and off-premise in a seamless manner, which we'll go into detail around today.
Yeah, so sessions around how we enable enterprise storage with Windows Azure. And this is a very new solution from Microsoft. You may have seen us having this little box out in the hub today. So it's just a great opportunity for us to introduce you around to the StoreSimple solution and how you can use this technology to help reduce some of the storage challenges that you have managing systems today. So just in terms of some of the objectives we want for today and some of the things we're going to talk about, I'm just going to sort of talk through some of the challenges we have around managing enterprise storage today from a traditional point of view and introduce you to what the StoreSimple solution is and why it's so unique in the industry when it comes to managing enterprise storage. And then Ben's going to jump on and we'll take you through a demo and introduce you to the capabilities of StoreSimple. And from that, you'll probably get a pretty good feel on just how simple storage can be with the solution. I think the branding's spot on in terms of the management of this capability. And then we'll pop up and sort of wrap up with some sort of use cases, some of the considerations, what the financial stuff looks like. And, we'll have some time for some questions and answers at the end of it. So, hopefully you guys get some good sessions out of this today. When we think about enterprise storage today and how you manage all of that infrastructure, those challenges are quite broad. When you think about the infrastructure that you need to stand up and support around managing data growth inside the enterprise today, you've got your primary storage, you've got archive storage, disk-based backup, tape management, off-site tape, DR considerations. This stuff gets really, really complicated to try and manage. We end up with equipment spool, we're buying more SANs because we need to keep on top of the data growth. Trying to manage our backup is getting really, really complicated now. There's a lot of customers I speak to where they're heading towards 11-hour backups. It's when they hit the 12 hours that problems are really going to start happening for them. Disaster recovery becomes quite complicated and hard. When I need to recover back data back, it takes me a long time to get information back. So when we think about storage today, it's become a critical part of running a business, but it's becoming extremely complex and expensive to try and manage this thing. And so there's got to be a point where we've got to start doing things a little bit differently. The great thing is this is where what we call hybrid cloud storage can really play a part in that. And that's sort of bound behind this box sitting in front of me here. When you look at it, it's an enterprise SAN, and that's exactly what it is. The key difference with this solution is that it integrates natively into Windows Azure, into a public cloud. So you get the best of both worlds. You get high-performance on-premise storage with the benefits of the economy of scale of things like Windows Azure when you start paying about 6 cents per gig per month. We can do all of the things that you do today with your traditional storage. You've got your SAN, we've got cloud integrated tiering inside the solution, the snapshot capability that you do today. We do what's called cloud snaps, which is moving that snapshot up into the cloud where it's highly available. And the ability then to recover from any location with a StoreSimple device. So Azure essentially becomes your offsite DR capability. All you need is another StoreSimple appliance and internet connection, and you can get access to your data. So as a result of this, we can really start to dramatically lower the total cost of ownership around managing storage, and in some cases up to 80% in terms of how you think about doing that with traditional infrastructure today. So the solution is basically, it's like setting up an enterprise SAN. You provision volumes to the SAN, just like you do today on any other enterprise storage technology. But we integrate this into Windows Azure, and Ben's going to take you through exactly how this all works. The great thing about it is it takes about 10 minutes to get the thing up and running. It's really, really straightforward.
If you look at this slide, you get a full view of actually what the StoreSimple solution is. We've got straight up there. I mean, you've got your server sitting up there connecting via iSCSI. There's no special protocol. You'd have to pick up applications and move them off to the cloud. You'd have to change your existing applications to have RESTful API access. You just put it in there in between using iSCSI protocol. On the back end, still simple then, interacts with Windows Azure from an API layer. It will move blocks of data back and forth, totally seamless to your application. And we talk about taking away a lot of those other tasks that we have that happens with storage today, which isn't just primary storage, which Jaron touched on before, but it's also the archive and the backup and the DR and the offsiting. This is how we address these challenges.
So some of the challenges we've had traditionally with cloud storage is the fact that it didn't really talk to anything. So we've had this great capability of low-cost storage in the public cloud, but none of this can integrate natively with what we're actually doing on-premise today. So those challenges were around, there was no sort of interface, no API interface I can take from a traditional on-premise environment and then start to connect it into the public cloud. I can't integrate into my existing backup processes today. So none of the infrastructure I'm managing today would actually integrate with the public cloud. The other thing is when you think about this is about the performance aspect of things, especially here from New Zealand, there's the latency thing will pop up. You know, if I'm trying to start to send data back and forth up into the cloud, isn't latency going to play a big part in this? And it's going to get really, really complicated for me to manage that. The biggest thing then is around security. What happens to the data that I'm putting up in the cloud? So the nice thing with this solution is that all of those sort of things have been addressed as well as the technology, the fact that this is an integrated solution out of the box. The data is also encrypted while we send it to the cloud. So we use SSL while we're sending the data up, and then the data at rest is encrypted. You generate the encryption key. That data, as soon as it leaves the appliance, is fully encrypted with AES 256-bit encryption and then kept up in the cloud. When it hits the Azure side, we create 3 copies of that data and spread it around the data center, and then we take another 3 copies and geo-replicate that to another data center automatically for you. So the data you then have sitting up in the cloud, there's 6 copies in 2 geographic separate data centers for, you know, between 6 and 9 cents a gig per month. So the target opportunities for storage is when you think about all that data growth, we're looking at sort of 56% growth, compound growth in terms of storage today. But most of that working set data is the data that people are accessing on a regular basis. So the great opportunity around where we start to look at cloud storage is that if you think about traditional tier 2 data and a lot of the use cases that we see on the screen here, about 20% of all the stuff that we keep around tier 2 unstructured data is data that people access on a regular basis. But potentially 80% of the information is just sitting there. I access it infrequently or just keeping it because I need to keep it. So that's a great opportunity around where this technology come in is that the 20%, the stuff I'm accessing on a regular basis, is sitting on the SAN. I've got a SSD, SAS, Enterprise SAN technology sitting here, but I get the benefit of putting the 80% up in the cloud where I can, obviously it's nice and affordable. So the really good use cases for the solution is things like file shares, externalising the blob storage around SharePoint, Exchange Archives mailboxes, so I can give users a really decent-sized email archive mailbox, and just keeping stuff that I don't really need to access very often, but I just need to keep it somewhere. A sort of really good use cases for where this technology can come in. And when you think about all of the storage challenges you have today, it's probably associated with most of the things you see on the screen here. We don't really target tier 1 database applications, that sort of thing, because that's not really where the challenge are in terms of managing our storage growth. Our storage growth is actually happening with these use cases that you see here. So in terms of how the system actually works, there's a lot of intelligence built into it, so I don't have to manage the system, I don't have to manage the tiering capability. As we start writing data to the volumes that we've created, everything hits a SSD tier, so everybody benefits from already high-performance disk. At the same time, we're then deduping that as well, so we'll give you back 50% of the storage that you're taking up today just through dedupe.
And this is an inline process too, so it's happening as the data flows in, and again, transparent to you and the applications and the server itself.
Yeah, and so this is sort of, you know, tiering as you think of it today. As the SSD tier fills, it needs more space. Actually, when the system's actually writing the data in, it's analysing at a block level to work out how often is this data being accessed by the user and sort of ranking that data so it knows the age of that technology, or the file, sorry. So as the SSD tier fills up, it needs more space. It then takes the oldest data, compresses it, shifts it onto a SAS tier. And then again, as the SAS tier fills up and it needs more space, it then encrypts that data and then moves that data up into the cloud. So it's only starting to move data to the cloud when it needs more capacity on the appliance here. So it's not sending stuff.
There's a question. The question was, is that block or file? The data's moved with Install Simple at a block level. We take the blocks of data, we chunk it to make sure the alignments improve for better deduplication, and we fingerprint it. We actually fingerprint the data so we actually know what block of data that is and we can recognize it in our metadata, and then it's tiered back and forth at a block level. It's all transparent. As we said earlier, it's a nice SCSI storage array, so you don't see any of this from a file level. It's not like traditional archive where you have stubs or something else left behind. Everything looks like a local drive. Whether the data is partially in the cloud, totally in the cloud, or on-premise, it all looks like a local file on a local drive. Great. So the question was, what happens if we put a SQL database, and how will it treat the blocks of data when it takes the blocks of data up to the cloud back and forth? 100%, yes, you could put a SQL database or a large flat file sitting there, which is, it's one of the things we're not targeting right now, and I'll touch on that in a moment, but it will move data around. As far as you can view, the data is all local. It hasn't tiered anything off, any maintenance plans, any details you have in there, configuration, etc., on that block and that database remain the same, seamless. We're not targeting relational data at the moment. We're actually avoiding it quite heavily until we get a lot of more validation points out there. A risk that we're afraid of, it's a new product. We don't want to go out there and actually have any issues with our customers. We want to do everything very, very well with the new technology. So the risk of putting a database, if you have, say, a 20 terabyte database, which is quite large for SQL, but you can do it, obviously, not 20 terabyte even, let's just go to 100 gig, and 10 gig of that database gets tiered off to the cloud. You're not accessing tables very often. What happens is, if you do a re-index operation, every single block of data in a SQL database will get read through. SQL database latency maximums are 20 milliseconds. So what would happen then is we're going to have a database fall over because latency is going to be too high in that last 10% of the blocks of data, because it's going to be in the cloud. Instead of being 15 milliseconds of latency, we're maybe going to have 100. So for an application, if I'm opening this PowerPoint file 3 months later, I'm not really going to notice a difference in latency of 100 milliseconds versus 20. But for a SQL database, there will be a challenge.
So you externalize and ship the blob storage out of SQL.
So the question was, how do we use it with SharePoint if it all lives in SQL? thanks, Jaron. so for SQL, we externalize it. We actually have a remote, an RBS provider that you get with StoreSimple. We've got a white paper out at the moment for SharePoint 2010, another one coming out for 2013 right now, which has the whole process of how to externalize it. So we're using RBS provider, remote blob storage. We'll take the actual binary data, the data which is not well suited to relational databases, your files, your Word documents. And these are challenging, particularly, SharePoint's great, and you love the functionality, I can keep 7 versions, but to keep it in SQL on fast disk at low latency and try and back it up like you do a normal SQL database is a bit of a nightmare. Plus you come into limitations like your, 400 gig limit on a SharePoint database if you kept the data in there. If we take the data out, take it off to StoreSimple, we can then efficiently back up that binary data, and the SQL database then is much, much smaller. So our actual information that needs to be quick, our indexing, our searching, etc., which is going on in SQL, can be on very fast disk all the time and be a much, much smaller, easy to manage database.
Good. So, where was I? When the stuff comes back. as soon as I access a file, that file is in downloaded, decompressed, and sped up onto the SSD tier. This all happens completely automatic. As a user, I probably wouldn't even know that it's coming back from the cloud. It may take me a few seconds longer than normal to get access to a file, bearing in mind that that's a file I probably haven't touched about, 3 months, 6 months or so. So that's kind of how the process works. It's essentially cloud is your third tier in terms of a SAN technology today. The other benefit being is that you don't have to scale up this anymore. So I'm scaling out into the cloud because that's where ultimately all files get old at some point and stop being used by users, or at least frequently, and that's where you start actually growing the Azure side of it. You don't grow the on-premise side of it anymore. So around disaster recovery and capability, it's got an integrated backup solution built into the solution as well. So it'll be taking snapshots of the data sitting on here and the reference information sitting on the volume in the cloud as well. All that's moved up into Azure, so all of my data sits up in Azure. So in the case of a disaster recovery, I need to file over to another site. We don't do replication between two StoreSimple boxes in two locations. All I need is to basically be able to read the data and the configuration file out of Azure. I then present those volumes back, download the data. Again, the thing with the restore and I think we'll touch on this in a minute, is that we don't download everything for that volume. If it was a 10 gig volume, we're not downloading 10 gig worth of data onto the secondary site. We present up all the metadata, then only the information that users start hitting is the information that starts coming back. So again, the restore aspect of things is really, really efficient. And it means you can essentially do a failover like in that case in a few minutes.
And we call this process a thin restore. So we're not pulling back all the data, all the cold data, the data you don't need. We're only pulling back the metadata and then the actual data being requested.
Yeah.
So...
So in terms of how we manage security on the system, I can't pronounce that word, so I'll say we mix stuff up a lot. Yeah, you're the one. We mix it up a lot. And so we've got that throughout the system itself, both for the data we store in Azure and the system, and the data on the SAN itself. As I said, we encrypt everything before we send it up. You generate the encryption key, you own the key. That's why it's very important to back up the configuration of the appliance, because if you lose a configuration of this appliance, you lose all access to your data. So it's kind of important that you do that.
It's like remembering your domain password. You're not going to forget it, are you? You're going to write it down, put it somewhere very, very safe. It's a rather important key. So generally, a lot of, you know, if you've got a CA, a KMS, use it that way. So your key management server, your certificate authority, manage it in that manner. So the key can be very, very long and complex. I think it's better, but store it safely.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So you generate the key, you own the key, only you've got the key, so we can't access your data. Neither can the NSA. All the blocks that we store in Azure.
Yeah.
There's a lot we do to actually mix it up as well inside Azure itself. So as I said before, we generate 3 copies of that data. That's all backed by a 99.9% monthly availability SLA to ensure that you've always got access to the information when you need to access it.
So I've got a colleague in the US who loves to use the phrase, it's like putting it through a shredder twice, because we're taking these blocks of data which we're chunking up and then we dedupe them and then we compress it. So it's all these blocks which are all mixed up. You've got no metadata up there, so you can't actually read them easily. And then dip it in black ink, which is the actual encryption key itself. So people still could get to that data conceivably, but I'll tell you what, if they're working that hard to get to that data and they can get a copy, they probably deserve it.
So the backup solution inside the box as well. So we can do local snapshots on the appliance for quick point-in-time recovery. We can then do what's called cloud snaps, which is basically your daily, weekly, monthly, incremental forever backups, which are then compressed, encrypted, and moved up into the cloud. So when it comes to then restoring, you basically go back to that backup and restore it back. You can either restore over the top of that volume, or you can clone it, bring it up, present the metadata, grab the files you want out of that backup, and only those files are when they come back. I think we'll show you that in the demo in a minute. The net result of that is the RTO around recovery from backup is really, really fast, because it's only the stuff you really care about that's coming back. You know, one of the old common scenarios was, I've got, you know, it's now 4 o'clock in the afternoon, a user's come to me and says we need some information from an archive. That archive tape's now sitting off-site somewhere. It's going to take till tomorrow for me to get the tape back. Then I've got to restore a terabyte of data off that tape, grab those, you know, 10 PowerPoint slides that they wanted. By the time I've done that, they've turned around and says, I didn't need it. I found it on a USB stick, so thanks for your time. And you've spent a day and a half trying to recover the data.
Yeah.
Obviously, in this case here, it takes you a couple of minutes to find that backup, clone the volume, bring it up in a drive editor, say, hey, it's on iDrive. And if they don't ever touch it, nothing ever gets brought back. So it's really about making your life easier from that point of view.
Yeah, and if we look at this graph up here, this is based on a 50 gigabyte data set. And we start down there, on 500 gig down here. And the reason why we're looking at this, I mean, tape's an obvious matter. You've got to recall the tape back. You've got to send it off. You've got to ship it. You've got to find what tape it is. You've got to re-index it, catalog it. It takes a while. Why do we also have a big red line then for cloud backup? Cloud backup outside is still simple as well. And the reason is a lot of backup products out in the marketplace, and what they will do is they'll do a backup, whether it's incremental, full backup, whatever the process may be. And that backup will then be wrapped up into a virtual tape format, into a tarball, into a .bak file. It'll be basically bundled up into a big chunk flat file. And what that's going to mean is, if you actually have to restore that data, you need to bring back that whole file and then crack it open and restore it locally. And pulling back that massive file is what will take a long time for the restoration here, because, as we said, thin restore, the data is able to be mounted up in a matter of seconds from a drive, from a snapshot even 3, 4, 5 months ago, we then only copy back the files we need out of that. And of course, they're deduped and compressed, so it's pretty quick.
So in terms of the appliances that we have in the family, there's a range of technology. Basically in different capacity depending on what we need. So the three that we pretty much have got on offer is the 7020, the 5520 and the 7520. Again, the capacity that we look about there is that 20% of the data that you access, the hot data, the data that people access on a regular basis. So the 7020 is between 4 to 20 terabyte of local storage, depending on deboot and compression. And then we basically move up. The max capacity in the case of the top box with 500 terabytes is basically addressable storage, including Azure as well. So that's when you start thinking about the actual addressable storage of this device here in front of me is about 220 terabyte effective storage, including the cloud as well. I'll talk about how we're actually selling these near the end. But those are essentially the different families that we've got.
Yeah.
The reason that we get very... we need to make sure that we size a box appropriately as there is no sort of upgrade to go from one to the other. You can't bolt another one on top of it and then double the capacity of it. That's a question. Yeah. So I probably didn't explain that.
So you asked about... So the question was, is this a Microsoft product? And the answer is yes, it is. Yeah. Microsoft acquired StoreSimple in October last year. The acquisition, before the acquisition, StoreSimple was the go-to-market storage solution for hybrid cloud, not just with Microsoft, but with our competitors as well. So when we recognise this, IDC, ESG, Tangela Group, different analysts out in the marketplace recognise StoreSimple as not just a leader in this category, but the actual people who created the category. So that's the reason behind our acquisition. The real-world dedupe ratio was a question. I'm going to pull out a big engineering answer, which is it depends. as you all probably know, if we're going to take... this is 4 terabytes usable here, for example. If we're going to take a bunch of JPEG videos and high-definition videos and put them on here, probably zero. If we're going to go put on Office files and SharePoint documents, Word, Excel... etc., we'll probably get maybe 2-3x dedupe and compression. However, if we go and put, say, virtual machines, we do use a lot of archive virtual machine, archive data, and we put that on there, we might get 5 or 6x. Yes? Sorry, say that again? So the question was if this works on file systems which are not NTFS.
In other words, not Microsoft.
I totally understand you. StoreSimple is it's an open solution. So we actually support and we have compatibility with... we actually have full support with VMware and we have the VAAI primitives included on there as well. Hyper-V support and Windows Server 2012 support we have, which you'd expect, with including ODX support. We also can connect this to a Linux box. Or whatever else your poison may be out there. I mean, didn't mean that. Come on. At the end of the day, look, one of the advantages of making this an iSCSI, block iSCSI storage array, is iSCSI is low cost, it's efficient, and everything works with iSCSI. You can connect a virtual machine, you can connect a VMware host, you can connect a Windows host, you can do a Windows cluster, you can connect a SUSE virtual machine, which is running... You know, this is an iSCSI initiator, and mount one of these volumes up. It's totally irrespective, and it's transparent to the application or the server.
Good.
So the question was, if we support other cloud service providers, my first answer would be, why do you want to? But yeah, look. At this stage, StoreSimple is an open system. I mentioned just a second ago. We do have support for some of the major cloud providers, and we will remain to have that support.
Yep. Good. All right.
E3. So there was a question, if we support Amazon. We don't personally support Amazon. We're all friends. No, but we do have a pre-configured setting to connect to Amazon S3. We do not have one for Glacier.
How about Mega?
When we look at worldwide major cloud providers, Mega's normally not up there, but
he's local.
He is local. At the end of the day, at the end of the day, when we look at Store Simple, it works with an API stack. So you talk about cloud providers that we've talked that have come up, and it can reference and work with a lot of the cloud providers like that. So it's on the API level. Some of the technologies out there that call themselves cloud providers, they do not work with, and it cannot work with because they don't actually expose true API stacks.
But there is examples where, customers are looking at having global, cloud provider. What do you call it? I'm going to use more than one, not just Microsoft, but somebody else. That'd be a good day, anyway. So there's cases with a solution where customers are putting their primary storage into Azure and then their backups go to AWS, for example. And they've got, proper redundancy from that point of view as well. But it's very much an open platform from that point of view. When you see how you buy it, you'll then go, well, why would I do that? But we'll touch on that in a minute. Right, Ben?
So we're just going to go through a quick demo of Store Simple. Pretty much, I've got a colleague in the US called Jai who came over from the startup. When they created the console, it pretty much had to pass the Jai test. He's a really lazy guy. So it had to be, if Jai can do this and demo it to a customer in 10 minutes, we can sell it. and sort of that's what we went after when we did it. And it actually leads to, when I sit down with a customer all the time, we do a demonstration, they quite often go, is that it? That's it. And it's quite interesting. So I'll flick over now to my laptop. I clicked the wrong one. Right one?
Yes.
Good. Okay, so Store Simple. We've got a web-based console right now. You can see that up there. And so we go to the site over here. We just log on with my default username and password, which I should change. And when you log on, you'll get a splash screen. It'll show things like your standard usage, how much data is sitting on there, any performance right now. This is in a demo lab, so not a lot of performance right now. Bit of read, bit of write. That's when I took a snapshot a little while ago and I was copying blocks of data up. And from Store Simple itself, how do we actually connect to the cloud? We can go in, we can see our basic iSCSI settings first here, which is your IP addresses, your NTP servers to make sure your data is in sync with the Windows Azure cloud, so you have your NTP server, your SNMP traps, and things like your actual support settings as well, so dial home over email alerts, SNMP and the like. So we're just running through here. Now, how do we connect to the cloud? I'm going to connect to a Windows Azure account. And then after that, I'm going to put an encryption key in, apply quality of service template, so we actually don't want to flood the bandwidth. And then I'm going to present up a volume to a Windows server. The demo box I've got in Mountain View in the US has 2 terabytes of usable capacity. We're going to present up a 10 terabyte LUN. And then we're going to put some data on there, and I'm going to show you the actual snapshot and recovery process, and also the DR process in case you lose a data center or you lose a box. So to connect to the cloud, I'm just going to go down to my storage blob. So we can see our blobs down here that I've created. Have you anyone out here used Azure console before? Great. It's pretty simple. Have a play. 30-day free trial included. So I'll go to my Techhead blob here. And what we do is we just go to manage access keys. So we'll see the keys. I'll take my account name. And I'll go back to the Store Simple console and go cloud credential. A little bit of latency as we're going over to the US, shared internet connection with a couple of thousand other punters right now too. And we'll get a configuration up here where we can see in a moment our current configuration. So we'll go create new cloud configuration. And we'll put a name in. This will be a name we're just going to call Techhead NZ. We select our cloud provider. Can do a pull down list if you really want, and select Microsoft Azure. We use SSL to connect because we actually want to make sure the data is not only encrypted by Store Simple, but it's also encrypted in flight. Add that extra layer of encryption when the data's in movement, and we'll put the actual blob account name in, which is Techhead Blob, and I'll go back and grab this primary access key, and we put that in there. Verify the connection, just make sure we can connect up to Windows Azure. And you'll see down the middle will say verified, we hit save now. And that's it. That's actually us connected to the blob in Windows Azure. That's all it takes. Now, how do we make it so we can actually make sure the data is encrypted and control what data flows up to the blob, how much bandwidth it utilizes? We go down to cloud and cloud configurations. And within the cloud configurations, we go new cloud configuration. We'll give it a name, which will be TechEd, put T in. TechEd Cloud, our credential, which is the credential I just created, which is TechEd NZ. And we can have a backup. I'm not going to have a backup right now. We have a quality of service template. So we can put in QoS templates to limit the bandwidth utilized. So how much data is it pushing up to Windows Azure? We don't want to push up, say, 100 megabit of data during business hours if our bandwidth is only 100 megabits. So we can put it down to 20 megabit between 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. and change it around. On weekends, we can do different schedules. It's quite flexible, so you have that option in there. And then we can say enable monitoring, which I always do. And we go over to security. And security is where we put our encryption key in. So you'll put it in the box here. And as you see, there's a warning. Remember the key. Don't forget the key. And you can put a very long string in, which I would generally recommend. In this case, I'm going to put a quick, dirty string in for the demo, which is TechEd NZ. Don't look at it. And we hit save. Now, that's our configuration to connect up to the blob and how we connect up to that storage blob in the cloud now. So we've done our account credentials. We've done our encryption, and we've done our configuration around quality of service. So now, how do we present a volume? We simply go down to volumes, hit create volume. As before, we give it a name, which is TechEd NZ Vol. We select a volume type, so how we treat the data, how we tier the data. If it's preferred to be local or not, is based on actually these settings down here. We can go into a custom volume, which we would generally recommend only doing with support. But you go and select, say, a file server volume. We then go and select the cloud configuration. What cloud configuration is it going to back into? Is the data needs to be tiered or snapshotted off? And this is the TechEd cloud I've created down here. Access type, read write. You might do a read only if you're doing a clone or a volume, simply just to read some data from a DR scenario, from a test perspective. And then we select the volume size, which in this case I'm going to do 10 terabytes, so 10 to 40 gigabytes. I mark it online and I turn on monitoring. Daily cloud snapshot, I'm going to turn off because I'd like to put a policy in place myself that I can control, not use a daily automated one. And finally, we go up to security. So everyone here, have you done storage admin before? Anyone? Yeah? Good. When you present a LUN up to a server, you need to do LUN masking. So you need to actually make sure you can limit which servers can see that. This is the same thing here. We call it an access control record. So we select the IQN. And we can give it a LUN ID or let it be an automated LUN ID. You might do that if you're doing a cluster configuration. You have a matching LUN ID if you're doing something in, say, in a Windows cluster, or you're doing something even in a VMware cluster. You want to make sure it's both a LUN ID 1, same SCSI ID. That's why you would do that. And hit save. And now what we've done is we've actually created a volume which is presenting up as 10 terabytes. Any data we put on that volume will be thin provisioned, it'll be compressed, it'll be deduplicated in line as we fill up that SSD dedupe tier. So let's go have a look in disk management and provision the volume.
And that's some provisioned, right?
It's all thin provision. We can see down here a 10 terabyte volume now. So I'm going to bring it online. And of course, we want to put data on it, so a bit of format it too. So we're going to make a new initialize disk, make it a GBT because we're going over 2 terabytes in capacity, and hit OK. Now, new simple volume, all the capacity available, give it a drive letter E, give it a name which we'll call TechEd, and I'm going to give it a block size of 64K, which matches the block size and still simple. We normally recommend doing the block size to match. And then we perform a quick format, and that's it. We now have, as soon as the format finishes, we now have a 10 terabyte volume that will seamlessly move data back to and forth from the cloud. As soon as it formats. And you can see it's come up there now. Any questions? Great question. The question was, does it integrate with System Center, whether it's SCCM or SCOM? At this stage, no, it does not. We do have email-based alerting, email dial home. We have SNMP traps. And System Center is right now an area of focus for engineering team to get the integration packs out and ready to go for Store Simple going forward. The question was about SMIS provider for VMM, and there is none at this stage. But again, going forward through the development lifecycle, this is an October acquisition, and there's a lot of focus about getting it into the mainstream of Microsoft products. Okay, the question was, if we do a restoration, how does it actually read the metadata and know what metadata to pull down, primary, secondary, depending on the sites? And the answer to that is, when we do the, we do a process called a cloud snap, that also bundles up the metadata to a separate bucket in the blob. And if we do the fact of a restoration, the thing we pull down when we do the actual restoration is the metadata. We don't pull any actual data down, it's just metadata. And we pull that metadata down first, and then how do you know which files to restore? You will actually go, and when you double-click on a file, when you go and open a file or read a file, copy a file, those are the blocks of data will pull down. So it's only going to hydrate the data which is being requested. And, I mean, yes, in the event of a DR, the situation will be those files will be slower than normal to open. They may be a couple of seconds rather than 50 milliseconds, but in the event of a DR for most users, particularly for the data sets we're talking about, it's generally acceptable. The fact that people can see their data within tens of minutes takes away a lot of the panic and risk, the feelings of risk anyway. And the fact that they can browse through that data and then open a file, it may take, Jesus, a little bit slow, but it's still open, so I can get to my files. My picture of a cat from 3 years ago is still there. Any other questions? No. For what you're talking... So the question... Sorry, I should have actually repeated the question. The question was, if we have one store simple in one geo and one store simple in a different geo, if we can then use them as caching appliances on-premise at both locations for the same data set. And the challenge... We can't do this, and the challenges around that is, if we're talking about this data set, there has to be an owner. Otherwise, we have a split-brain scenario where data can get corrupted, so we don't support doing that. We can do things with... DFSR around that. We can actually have read-only sites. You can have read-write both ways. And we definitely support Store Simple with DFSR. But and you can also do it in other manners too. If you have a secondary site and you want to get a copy of the data, you can restore part of the config to the secondary Store Simple. Bring up a read-only copy from a snapshot, copy the data down, whatever you need, and that is a way of doing it too. But at this stage, active-active across geos is definitely not something we're doing.
I did hear that slightly different. That's why I nodded.
Okay.
In terms of having, you could have two coming back to the same common place and have each unit failing over for each other. You could do that.
But you definitely, that on the other hand is something, yes, we can do. So I'm going to quickly show you now the actual cloud snapshot process, and pretty much 100% of customers out there use this process, because once data is sitting on Store Simple as a primary storage array, you have a huge benefit in the way we can address snapshots and tiering and archiving and all that whole process of off-siting. It's very, very simple. It's very quick to do. So let's have a look quickly at the drive I'm using as an example, which is SharePoint Blob. It has a bunch of files, bunch of data. I think we've got about 2 gig of data sitting on there. 2.44 gig. There we go. So I took a cloud snapshot of this just before. And what we're going to do now is show you the actual process for creating those cloud snapshots, the policies around it, and then also restoring them. So we can see the volumes that Store Simple is presenting up to the server through here. And you can see here the eDriver just presented as TechEd NZ. We then create the concept of a volume group, which is a logical container to put the volumes in. And this is what we apply policies to. We can have multiple volumes on the one appliance or across multiple appliances sitting in the one volume, so they get snapshot at the same point in time. And then we can apply the policy here by simply going right-click and going create policy. We also can do an ad hoc take backup. If you're about to do an upgrade, if you're about to do a change, a move, you might go and do that process. And we'll go and select a cloud snapshot, and we'll say keep 10 copies. And this is going to be my daily snapshots. I want to keep 10 business days. My schedule may be run it daily at 10 o'clock at night, and then we're going to have it enabled. Don't expire, repeat every hour. We're not repeating every hour. And let's reoccur every day, and we'll accept. And that's our policy to create a daily policy around backups and backup management. We can then go down to backups down here and see our different volume groups. So the one which I've got here called SPB vol blog, blob, is actually it's a SharePoint RBS volume. So we can see I've taken cloud snapshots here and one just most recently down here on the 11th of the 9th. And if I need to restore the data, I can see the volume sitting inside here and I simply can go up and right-click on a volume and say clone. Before I do this, I'm just going to go in and out of the production volume here, delete all the ones starting with 1, just as an example, so we know they're actually off the system, permanently deleted too. So we're not getting any blocks which are over there already. And we can hit clone. And now it'll prompt me going, give it an alias. We'll call the alias techhead clone. Assign a drive letter or a mount point. I'm going to give it volume letter B and hit accept. And what's going to happen now is within a couple of seconds up here, you're going to see this volume come available as volume B and any minute now. There we go. Maybe not. Hit refresh. Sorry, there we go, volume B at the end, you can see it there. And it's got all the folders I've just deleted in there. I can then go in there, select these folders. I can actually even go in first and let's open a document first and go what is in there. And we can see the document actually opens up. And that's from the cloud itself. And we can now go down and copy that files back and do our restoration process by copying all these files starting with 1. Take it over here. And yeah, that's correct. And let's go to my volume, which was Y, SharePoint blob. Copy our data in. And it's copied back over. It wasn't much data, and that's sitting in California, so the latency and the internet bandwidth is pretty high, but still, it's a pretty simple process. Quite often, you're not copying back 5, 6, 7 gigabytes of data in a restoration, you're copying back 3 files, 2 files, 1 email, whatever it may be. And that's pretty much it. We can also go in the console if you want to see as well, and there's other things in there as well around reporting, where we can go and view the actual I/O or the actual capacity. And just quickly, I'll show you the restoration process too. If we are actually in the event where Store Simple at site B has failed, the whole site's failed, we want to get to the data it's got up in the cloud, I can do that right here. I can go configuration import, browse to my configuration file, which I would have saved to a different location where it's actually safe and protected. Let's go down to temp, and it's right here. Low configuration. And what actually happens when you hit low configuration, if I can use my mouse, is you'll get the option to recover everything, to restore every single setting, as you can see through here, from bandwidth to throttling. Or you can simply just go and restore the cloud account, which is, let's go, our cloud configuration sitting over here, which is Makut something config. So we can do that. So I'm going to uncheck and just restore this cloud configuration, which is a cloud account, the encryption key and the configuration. And from that, we can actually go back and restore volumes. And then we just hit import configuration. And that's it. We then go and suck down the metadata, and we can go to the backup of the volumes and actually mount one of those volumes up. It'll take a little bit to recover metadata here, so it'll take a few minutes, so I'm not going to show it now, but it really is that simple to get a configuration back and to actually get a DR scenario happening.
Is that scheduling the WAN problem?
Yes, it is. Do you want to see it?
Yeah.
Sure. So we go to our system settings, quality of service templates. And when it loads up, you can see in here the WAN throttling options. So you've got a name, then we look at our schedule. So our schedule can be, you can put multiple points of granularity in there too, saying between this time, shape to this, after this time, shape to this. And for the whole snapshot process I just showed you as well, it can be done through here too. So you don't have to go to this MMC snap-in. The MMC snap-in is used for VSS consistent snapshots. But if you want to do things on a cluster where you don't want to have this installed on multiple machines, you just want to take crash consistent, or you're running it on Linux, for example, like you asked before, we can just do it straight through here and manage the whole snapshot. The only difference is no VSS, and for the restoration, you'll actually have to go in, see a raw data volume, and just mount it up as a drive letter where the console automated that for you, and that's it. And that's pretty much the demo, guys. Exchange is, again, in a similar boat where it's a relational database. So we are hesitant to put Exchange up there. Same with SQL. I mean, there may be instances where we put part of the file up there, but we put one file up there, but it'd have to be very, very small and have to validate it. So we're approaching relational databases with caution. But for Exchange, if you're looking at what we do with the archiving to a separate EDB database, we definitely support that. There are a few settings and configurations we'd recommend you put in place first. So things like you don't want to do a full index on the database and the like. Question?
What about
the SQL disk backup? Yeah, so the question was, what about a SQL disk backup? And the answer is, look, I'm going to pull it out again. It does depend. We don't push StorSimple as a backup target because of what I said before about it rolling it up into big tarballs. And for a SQL disk backup, if the SQL disk backup is a small enough size, which a lot of databases it may be, it's 100 gig, it's 50 gig, it probably won't be an issue. It's just making sure we size it up and there's local capacity free. Because if you're doing a disk backup and we've only got, say, that high watermark on StorSimple is about 85%, if we've only got 1 terabyte, 1.5 terabytes of data free, and your disk backup is 2 terabytes, it's not going to work. The latency is suddenly going to go through the roof as it starts pumping data off to the cloud. So, but if we're talking about a relatively small SQL disk backup, it is okay, acceptable. That's correct. That's correct. I mean, also, if you're using SQL backups as part of a management plan too, they're not doing much to the data at all. It's still in its native format to within the .bak file. It's not something like through a different backup product where it's wrapping it all up and making the blocks very unique. Any other questions? The question was if we've ever had any customers have challenges with data corruption when trying to restore from the cloud. Not to my knowledge, no. So there are multiple copies within the cloud. We have multiple points of time within the cloud, so the risk of that is pretty low. It's an open system, and I'll leave it there. Come talk to me after the session. Sorry? No. The question was, does it support any other backup software? We don't have support or validation for any backup software, like the graph I referred to before too. We don't recommend StorSimple as a backup target. It's a primary storage target, and it just happens to be able to then very, very seamlessly and efficiently archive and backup the data itself without using any third-party software. So you're talking about using Commvault or something similar to actually control StorSimple to control the backup schedules and policies? No, we don't at this stage have anything like that, no.
But as a side, you can use Commvault to backup into Azure anyway.
Yeah, so Commvault natively, plug for one of our partners, Commvault natively also will take data sets and it will back them up to Windows Azure, so will DPM, System Center DPM.
This is probably this is probably one of many different ways that we can use Azure for enterprise storage. This is obviously a really nice integrated solution. If you're already using Commvault today and you want to be able to use Azure as a place to put your archive, then Commvault and Pana will natively integrate into Azure anyway. DPM will do the same sort of thing. If you have a small business running Windows Server 2012, you can back up directly into Azure. So there's actually quite a different number of ways that you can do that.
So we had a question here first. Sorry. So the question is, how are upgrades to the appliance rolled out? We will release information, including release notes, on onlinehelp.storesimple.com, which are downloadable. The upgrades can then be downloaded by you, or you can do it in conjunction with Microsoft support to download and install the actual upgrades. The upgrades don't, it's zero disruption upgrade, so you basically do the policy again, standard storage array feature in the enterprise, which is upgrade the first controller, put it back online, upgrade the second controller, so in place without outage. So the question was if we can actually run a report to see what data is on which tier of the appliance, and yes and no. So we can see what's local and what's in the cloud, but we can't see what's on SSD and what's on SAS. So let me just show you quickly what we do offer. Let's get it to come up here now. So through our reports over here, we can go and see our capacity, see our cloud capacity, host capacity, or local capacity. So we can go see what's in the cloud. We can see the local capacity down here. And you can actually see some idea about what's on what tier locally too. So you can see the SSD linear, SSD dedupe, and the hard drive tier too. So that might have been the new patch release and I've missed it, but we've actually got more detail on it now. And you can go and see, you can change the time resolution. And this data is kept for a number of times, depending on which reporting you have turned on and capacity you have free. And you can, of course, go and see the cloud capacity usage as well. The question was, what is the minimum requirement for the link size?
Yeah,
the WAN itself, so the connection to the internet. So the connectivity to the internet, we try and recommend that if possible you have 20 megabits a second. Potentially not suitable for remote branches. Again, going back to another technology set, something like DFSR is probably the most efficient way to do that. However, I mean, and the reason we say 20 megabits a second because we want to make sure there actually is enough bandwidth available to move the data back and forth and not have any challenges around that. I have throttled it down lower and it can work as well. It just depends on how your data changes, how much data you have and your rate of change. So the question was, what happens if the appliance, the connectivity to the internet is down? Firstly, obviously, you try and have diverse internet connections, like networking connections, like your internal, your WAN or your LAN connectivity. If you do lose all connectivity to the internet, what will happen is it will keep serving data, but when it actually does get a request for a block in a cloud vault, it will put the volume offline after a certain timeout period, which makes it unavailable for that period. The question was, can you set the volume not to be migrated to the cloud? You can't make it not tier any data to the cloud because we don't expand these devices. The principle is we size your working set correctly, and your working set generally doesn't grow a large amount. Your archive set grows a huge amount. What we do have is an option called Prefer Local on StoreSimple, and if we select a volume to be preferred locally, so we'll do this with things like a cluster core and volume, a log volume. We don't want to tier that data off to the cloud. There's no point. It doesn't help. We can do that, and that will reserve a chunk of storage within here, and that storage won't be tiered off, that 40% or so, and that 40% will be local-only storage, except if you go and use all of that 40%, your data starts creeping over, and your data then goes cold, it's creeped over, it can be tiered to the cloud. But if we have concerns around that, and we're looking at applications around that, then what we would do is just make sure we size correctly to make sure we put data in there that wouldn't go over that threshold. If the data sits in there, we can then also still use the cloud snapshot capability. We can copy the whole binary, the whole baseline of the data up to the cloud for a backup and then incremental change blocks for multiple points in time as well.
Cool. All right. Well, we're almost out of time. There's a couple of independent analyst reports that you can download off the net, or we can get you access to that so you can sort of get a third-party review in terms of this technology and what they think of it. Obviously, StoreSimple itself is globally certified, so it's a Windows Server 2012 2008 R2 certified device as well as a VMware certified device as well. StoreSimple's won a number of nice awards over the years for their technology as, from an innovation point of view, which is good validation of the technology. I'll just get through a couple of... just in terms of how we get right to the punchline. how we're actually selling this product to the market is you don't actually buy the hardware itself. What you do is you buy an Azure monetary commitment. The monetary commitment is like a prepaid account balance for Windows Azure. You can use it for anything you like, not just storage, virtual machines, media services, websites, databases, everything that we do on Windows Azure. So in the case of this box here, you make a one-year 65K commit to Azure. We give you this free. It's worth $85,000. Year two, year three, you're only paying for what you actually... If you're just using it for storage, you're only paying for what you actually store in the cloud. So, you know, RRP, about $1,000 a year per terabyte. So if you're doing 10 terabyte of storage in the cloud, your ongoing cost is 10K per year. The other larger appliance is basically double that, and we give you the largest appliance for free, and that's worth about $150,000 New Zealand dollars for that as well. Different support options that we have. Our Platinum support, which we're basically the one that we mainly offer here in New Zealand, gives you dedicated on-site spare parts. We will ship you a spare controller, spare power supply, spare hard drives. When you buy the appliance, you keep it. It's user serviceable. I know if you go and ask IBM for dedicated on-site spare parts for a DS4700, it's going to cost you $25,000 a year. I know, because you used to sell it. So certainly just on that thing alone, just having the supportability yourself is a massive thing in terms of keeping the uptime and that kind of thing on it as well. So, yeah, those are the two offers that we've got at the moment. They're kicking through to, at this stage, December.
Look,
so I've had customers that were looking at spending 65K on Azure for a whole bunch of other stuff, and then we said, what's going on with your storage? And they went, oh, yeah, it's a real pain in the neck. We're going to go off and buy a new SAN. It's like, well, here you go. We'll just give you one. So that's nice. So, certainly, there's an OPEX cost as well, so it's not a capital expenditure for the appliance itself, but we give it to you. The monetary commitment for Azure is a pure OPEX cost as well.
A great analogy for it is, it's like a mobile phone plan. You'll go out to Vodafone or whoever it may be, and you'll go, I'm signing up for 24 months, I get a phone. At the end of that 24 months, I can just keep the phone and not use a telco or take it to another telco, or I can just pay for what I use or I can sign up again. It's the same thing with StoreSimple, except we're only 12 months. So it's so way better than Vodafone or someone else. And you can sign up for that, and you get to keep the appliance at the end of it. So you can renew for, if you're only using the equivalent of $30,000 a year of Windows Azure, renew for that.
So that was kind of the point around, you can use this for AWS, but you already got it, so what would you?
do many of you know the different services available within Windows Azure as well? I mean, there's a huge raft of, whether it's the things we understand quite simply, because what we do right now are virtual machines to our platform as a service and developing applications where the operating system is not the context for how we work, it's just a container. That's sort of, there's a huge amount of things in there. We find quite a lot of customers who will go out with 30 terabytes of data, use StoreSimple, particularly file data, SharePoint data, and then they go, okay, I've got this extra bit, my developers keep banging on the door, here you go, guys, and suddenly they can hand over a lot of the pain and frustration they get with the developers around dev test and make them happy and make themselves happy too.
Yeah. So, if you've got basically any challenges with your storage today, trying to keep on top of it, you're looking to go and buy a new SAN, anything like that, then by all means, give us a call. I guess it's one of the biggest things we've had this week talking about it is that people don't associate Microsoft with enterprise storage. So if I was going to go off and buy a new SAN technology or increase my storage technologies I have, I'd go and talk to Dell and EMC and HP and those guys. But we're very much in this market. This is a whole part of our devices and services strategy moving forward. So for more information, you can go to storesimple.com. There's a lot of information on that website. We're around for the rest of the week, just down Expo 4 with us today, but we'll be hanging around. And, don't forget to do your little survey of the session because you're going to win some cool toys. So, that's our time. Thanks very much.